You are listening to the Midcurrent Church Podcast. This week's message is the final message from our series titled, Red Letters, The Timeless Words of Jesus. For more information and to visit us online, check us out at midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
Hey, one of the things that I actually find most annoying is an obvious question. Truth be told, obvious questions come in many different places, but some of the worst offenders are actually Christians who write devotional books or like small group curriculums. I'm always shocked to discover that some of the leading authors and some of the leading publishers of these kinds of resources, this is just my opinion, I'm always shocked to see that they ask some of the worst questions. For example, I'm just kind of making this one up to give you a sense of what I'm talking about. Let's just say you're studying the famous Bible verse, John 3:16. I actually kind of referenced it last week. But just in this scenario, let's just say you're studying John 3:16. There's some kind of curriculum will tell you to read the verse first. And so you'll read John 3:16 that says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son." And then the first question for group discussion will be, based on this verse, why did God give his son? And the moments that follow are so awkward, because this is just my experience. No one says anything. Yeah, it's not because like they don't know the answer necessarily. It's because the answer is so painfully obvious. No one is saying anything out loud, because everyone is saying silently to themselves, like, is this a real question? Like, am I supposed to actually answer this out loud? People, you know, all of a sudden, kind of awkwardly, people start to like, I think it's because God so loved the world. I mean, has anybody like ever had these things happen to them? Okay, there's like a couple of head nods going here. Maybe this is just me. Now, the reality is these kinds of like obvious questions, it's not just a church thing, but I've been like in ministry long enough to have come across way too many of the most painful and the most obvious questions out there. And to be honest with you, it kind of drives me nuts. Like, I really hate obvious questions like these. And it often makes me, if I'm just being honest with you, it often makes me kind of question the people that ask them. Like, what kind of question is that? So that's why my antennas go up a little bit. Whenever I come across a particular question that Jesus once asked in the course of his ministry. And there's a question I want to take a closer look at today as we conclude this series called Red Letters in our Bibles today. The words that Jesus spoke, they show up in kind of, you know, big, bold, bright red letters. And so we've just taken the last month to take a look, you know, to see what we can learn about some of the things that Jesus did have to say. And today, what we're going to see in the red letters is that Jesus asks a man, quite possibly, the most obvious question in the history of the universe. And so today I want to try to figure out why in the world Jesus would do that, why he would ask such a painfully obvious question, and what there is for us to learn from it as a result. Because here's the deal. I think if Jesus were here today, I really do think that he would ask so many of us the very same question. So without further ado, turn your attention with me to the New Testament book of John chapter 5. If you brought a Bible, you can turn there. Maybe you look on an app, or you can just follow along with me. This will be on the side screen as well. This is relatively early in Jesus' public ministry. He's just traveled to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish holy days of celebration and remembrance. And here's where we'll pick up in John chapter 5, verse 2. It says this. Inside the city, near the sheep gate, was the pool of Bethesda with five covered porches and crowds of sick people. It was the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. Crowds of sick people would lay on the covered porches. What's all this about? Let me explain very briefly here. People had been led to believe that the pool of Bethesda was like a healing pool. Legends of these kind of places were not uncommon at this time in history. And once a place had been kind of identified, once the word had like spread even a little bit that this was like a place of healing, the tradition and the legends and the stories were like hard to stop. And so here specifically at the pool of Bethesda, the legend had it, right? The story that had been circulating is that occasionally an angel would descend into the pool and would stir the waters. And the first person of all the sick that laid on these porches, when the angel came and stirred the water, the legend had it, the stories were said that the first person that could go touch the water would be healed. So now here's John chapter 5, verse 5. It goes on to say this. One of the men lying there, right? Amidst all of these sick people, various sicknesses. One of the men lying there had been sick, forget this, 38 years. When Jesus saw him and knew that he had been ill, when he learned that he had been ill for a long time, he asked him, a question. Here comes the most obvious question. I think in the history of obvious questions, Jesus asked him, look at this. Do you want to get well? With all due respect to Jesus, on the surface, this feels like a whole lot more than an obvious question. It almost feels like kind of a dumb question. Do you want to get well? I'm going like, Jesus, what kind of question is that to a man like this? I mean, think about it. This man had been sick for 38 years. We know that his sickness was that he was what they called lame, right? He couldn't walk, right? His legs did not work. And I know that you all know that that means that that would have been a tough life for him to live. But let me try to paint just a little bit of a more vivid picture of what this life and condition would have been like for him. There's a biblical scholar by the name of Dr. Dwight D. Peterson. He's actually bound to a wheelchair himself, who made a presentation once at a meeting, a conference of biblical scholars, about the very moments throughout Scripture when Jesus encounters people in these kinds of conditions. And he spoke at length about things that we rarely consider. And so he pointed out, Dr. Peterson pointed out that the challenges for what he said were paraplegics. The challenges for paraplegics in the 21st century, he said, are considerable, yes, but they pale in comparison to the challenges in the first century world. Problems of mobility and livelihood and social isolation, they're just the tip of the spear. Personal hygiene was incredibly problematic, and people in this condition, he informed his listeners, people in this condition typically did not have like bladder or bowel control. And so as we start to consider the condition of this man that Jesus asks, like, do you want to get well? We can start with some of this extra information. We can start to build some bit of a greater portrait of what this man's life was really like, right? People would have to move him from place to place unless he crawled, in which case he would use his kind of hands to pull him from one place to the next, meaning his hands and his fingers were likely rough and torn and cut and you know, scabbed and bloody from the streets. Okay? If he did not have, we don't know for sure, but if he did not have bladder or bowel control, his own hygiene problems, which would have been problematic to begin with, just, you know, hair and teeth and clothes and what, I mean, his own hygiene problems just to begin with, if he did not have bladder and bowel control on top of that, his hygiene problems would have been like, exponentially worse. People stayed far away from him. We know that people like him in this day were just significant, significant outcasts. Here's what we know too. He sits at this pool every day. Every single day he sits at the pool in hopes that he might be the lucky one to race into the pool when the waters stir. And much to his discouragement, his mobility challenges compared to others who didn't have mobility challenges but were just, blind or deaf, right? Much to his discouragement, his mobility challenges meant that he was always the slowest to the pool if the waters were to stir. Okay, this is the life, this is the condition of this man that Jesus meets. And when Jesus sees the man, when he learns more about this 38-year-old condition, he has the nerve to ask the guy, "What do you think, man? Do you want to get well?" It almost seems insensitive, or like Jesus is like really kind of clueless. But the reality is that Jesus is far, far, far from insensitive, and he is not even close to being clueless. And so then the question we have to ask ourselves then is, what's going on? Jesus is full of compassion. He is not insensitive. He is not clueless. He is full of all of the wisdom from his heavenly Father, right? And yet he's asking what seems to be like such a painfully obvious question. And if this is the case, we got to ask ourselves, why? What's going on then? Something has to be going on. What is it? Why would Jesus ask a question like this? Well, here's what I can tell you. Jesus would only ask such an obvious question if there was really something else that he was getting at, something else that he was driving at, if there was a much deeper point that he was trying to make. And that's what's happening. Jesus asks such an obvious question because there is such a much more deeper point that he's trying to make. He wants this man, as well as every one of us, everyone who hears the story, he wants all of us to think a little deeper about what's really going on. See, what Jesus knew to be true is something that every single one of us needs to understand, and that's this, that there is a difference between being healed and being whole. There's a difference between kind of being just healed of a thing here and now and being whole for every moment that is still to come, right? There's a difference between just kind of getting over this thing that happened and getting ready for what's to come on the other side of the thing that happened. That the way I thought about it, this was kind of Jesus's way of saying like, hey, it's possible to kind of win the battle and still lose the war. And so Jesus, he's asking this really obvious question because I think he wants to know something more. He's asking such an obvious question because he wants to know if this guy really understands what getting well really means for him, not just in the moment, but in the long run. Because getting well for this man had, repercussions, or yeah, there was implications of getting well. And so I think this is his way of asking or saying to the guy in a sense like, hey, I know you want to be healed, but are you really ready to be whole? Are you really ready to get on with the life that I have in store for you? See, after 38 years, the pool had become this guy's only hope. And more significant than that, here's what I think had begun to happen. The illness, the injury had become his identity. In a small way, it had become kind of just a way of life, that this injury of his, this illness of his, it began to dictate his daily routines, and it had become the only way for this guy to make money or to get food even, because along with sitting at the pool in hopes of being the first one to get in the water, he would also sit at the gate every day and beg for food and for money from those who entered or exited through the gate in the city wall. This is the only way that he provided for himself on a daily basis. And so getting well, Getting well for this man who spent 38 years in the same place doing the same thing, right? Getting well for this man, it really meant finding work, re-entering society, starting to assume some more responsibility, building a new life for himself, forging a brand new identity. And I think this is what Jesus is really getting at. This is what he really wants to know, to ask this man, are you ready for that? Right? Are you really ready for everything that getting well will require of you for the long run? And the reality is, if this question was posed to some of us and to me, I would say, man, sadly, if we were asked, hey, are you really ready for what getting well will require of you for the long haul? I'd say, sadly, some of us are not. As strange as it sounds, people can become accustomed to circumstances, even really painful ones, because they're familiar. Right? And here's the hard part, and I'm just going to say it once, but here's the deal. Too often, some of those painful circumstances become a built-in excuse for why we're not further down the line in some area of our life than we would like to be. And so what we see is that Jesus's obvious question, it's all of a sudden not necessarily so obvious anymore, because the question in a way exposes whether or not this man is really ready for the changes that healing will bring, for the changes that healing will require of him. And in many ways, I think the question serves as a subtle warning, and that warning is this: your injury, it cannot become your identity. Whether it's something that you take on yourself or you let someone else assign to you, your injury, it cannot become in any way your identity, right? Jesus wants you to know you are not your injury, right? He's going, I can make you well, but you've got to be ready to put that behind you and to begin assuming responsibility and pursuing the life that I've called you to live. And I think the same is true for so many of us, right? Each of you here today needs to understand that you are not your injury or your illness, right? You cannot let whatever has hurt you handcuff you to a lesser life than the one that God has in store for you. And I'm not saying that you haven't been significantly impacted by some of those things that hurt you. I don't want you walking out of here like most insensitive pastor ever, right? That's not what I'm trying to say. Okay, there have been things that have hurt you, injury, illness, all down the line, right? I just don't want those things to handcuff you any longer. I'm not saying that you haven't been significantly impacted by the things that have happened to you. I'm not saying that you weren't hurt by it. I'm not saying it wasn't wrong what someone did to you. I'm not saying that you can't mourn the loss. I'm not saying that you can't grieve the pain or that you have to pretend that whatever happened to you didn't happen to you. I'm just saying that you cannot let the injury, the illness, whatever it is, you cannot let it become a part of your identity that dictates what you do every day, and worse yet, you cannot let it prevent you or trick you into thinking that you cannot triumph over whatever it is that has been keeping you down. This goes for every single one of us, right? We very well might carry a lot of hurts, right? A lot of pain, a lot of stuff because of some of the things that have happened to us. But here's the thing. I think sometimes we learn to live with it. And if we're really honest, I think sometimes we might even admit that we've kind of learned to lean on it at times. And so getting well, right? It means kind of like we can't lean on it, right? Sometimes as painful it is, we kind of learn to leverage those things. We figure out, we're resourceful people. We figure out how to kind of leverage these things for us. And so getting well means we can't, leverage that stuff any longer. Getting well means we lose out on kind of a handy dandy built-in excuse for why we're not in a different place than the one that we might want to be. Let me just try to give you an example from my own life about what I'm really getting at. I've been pretty open, if you've been hanging around here for a little bit. I've been pretty open about some of the lower back problems and the severe nerve pain that I have been experiencing all this past winter. The reality is, maybe you feel like I hit it pretty well. It was pretty awful. It was a miserable stretch this winter. Nothing. I had just disc pain and pinching nerves, and my old leg was dead. And I mean, it was like nothing I tried helped for months and months and months. I was sleeping like 3 to 4 hours a night, up at like 2 a.m., couldn't fall back asleep, pacing around the kitchen until someone woke up to provide me any company, right? I couldn't, based on what I learned about how the body responds, like I couldn't lie down or I couldn't sit down, right? That's when the pain was the worst. I had to get a stand-up desk here at my office at church just to be able to like get stuff done. And then I had to get a cushion to stand on, because by the end of the day, my feet and my knees hurt so bad. It was like, I can't stand any longer, but I can't sit either because it's so painful. And if I managed to ever sit down at all, standing back up was like a 3-minute, like 6-step process. You go from like elbows to like hands, and then hands on hips, and then like one at a time. And it was awful. I mean, I was so miserable. I couldn't do any of the physical activities that I enjoyed. I couldn't play basketball. I couldn't get out and enjoy life. It was horrible. And my wife and I prayed hard. I think my wife prayed harder than me. My prayed so hard for some kind of healing. My kids did too. At bedtime prayers, unprompted. I mean, I wouldn't even be like talking about this stuff with them, but my kids' prayers day after day, where they'd be praying for dad's back. And this went on for like 4, 5, 6 months, and it was horrible. Thanks be to God, I finally found my way into some treatment that helped me to start to heal, and now I'm back in action, okay? It was an answer to prayer. I mean, I like talk to extended family members. My mom's like, "Sten, I think it's a miracle." You know, I was like, "It's amazing." I know. I couldn't believe it. It was so bad. And there were days where I felt like nothing's going to change. But I'm finally back in action. And I do really feel like, man, God answered so many prayers. But here's what I realized. And this is where I'll just be honest with you here for a second. Here's what I realized when I look back on this stretch. I realized that the pain was horrible. I mean, praying every day, God, you got to do something here. When I look back, here's what I realized. The pain was horrible, and I hated the pain, yes. But I think there's a small part of me that had grown to appreciate the excuse that it provided me. Right, so for instance, let's say I was not as confident in my preaching or in just the work I had to do at church. It was easy for me to point to my back and how hard it was to concentrate all day long at work, which was true. And so I kind of thought like, well, hey, you know, I had an answer for that. And so now the pain is gone. I had nowhere to hide any longer. It's like, hey, man, you just got to do your job, right? If I didn't have the enthusiasm or the energy that I wanted when I got home from work to invest in my family or play with my kids, well, that's because I wasn't sleeping well and I was exhausted. And if my health and fitness wasn't exactly what I wanted to be, well, I had a legitimate reason. I had an excuse for why I wasn't where I wanted to be, because obviously if I could do the things that I really wanted to do, I'd be the fittest 40-year-old on the planet, right? I mean, but I can't. Okay, I had gotten well, and I thanked God for it. I had gotten well, but what I realized as I look back is I was not yet really all that like whole and prepared for what was on the other side of this. I had gotten used to a convenient excuse, one that I hated still. I asked God, please take it away, but I had gotten used to an excuse that I could use to explain why I wasn't, where I wanted to be or why I wasn't more of who I knew that it is that God created me to be. Gang, I think oftentimes we pray for a change in our circumstances, all while sometimes resisting the lifestyle that change will actually require of us. And so it becomes all too comfortable then to just let our injury and let our hurt and let our pain and our past define us and really dictate what's possible for us. And I just wonder if it's possible that the same is really true for any of you. And I hope your mind has already, you know, been considering some of this, but just in case, I want you to know I'm not talking only about physical injuries. I mean, although some of you may very well may have had physical injuries or illnesses that have significantly shaped the trajectory of your life, right? And so if that's you, you got to tell yourself, hey, the injury cannot become any part of your identity. You got to ask yourself, am I allowing what happened to me in the past limit what I believe is possible in the future? Like, yes, I might have been healed from what it is that has happened, but am I really ready to continue pursuing more of what is still to come? For you, your injury maybe has been more relational, right? Someone close to you hurt you, feels like they betrayed you, and it stunted your willingness to continue pursuing any type of relationship anymore. You may have gotten over the hurt in the past so that it doesn't really hurt any longer, but because of what happened to you, you won't really get close to anyone in the future, right? You might be healed from what happened, but you're not yet whole for the future and the things that God has in store for you. Your injury, it might be more emotional, right? So someone you trusted mistreated you or neglected you or didn't value you or respected you. For some of you, this injury, it may have been more familial or marital or professional, or might be related to the loss of someone or something, or a dream or a goal or something that was important to you. And I'm not minimizing any of it. I'm just saying, don't let it define you any longer. Right, you don't want to let it to define any bit of you know who it is that Jesus has called you to be. If you really want to get well, you might have to just kind of get up, as we're going to see in a moment here. This is what happens with a man. You might have to get up and get on pursuing the things that God has called you to live. Because just like the man in the story, that's what Jesus is prepared to help you to do. So long as you understand what or who really has the power to help you. See, if you turn back to the story, Jesus asks this question, do you want to be well? But we never really read how the man responds. Here's what he says. Look at this in verse 7. Jesus asked, do you want to get well? Verse 7, we see this. The man responds, I can't, sir. See, the dude has excuses of his own. I can't. Look at me, I can't. He says, I have no one to put me into the pool when the waters bubble. Someone always gets there ahead of me. Doesn't really matter what I want. Can't do it. Verse 8, Jesus told him, stand up, pick up your mat and walk. Verse 9, instantly the man was healed. He rolled up his sleeping mat and began walking. Don't miss this, gang. This is something I want all of us to see and kind of contemplate in our own life. Don't miss this in the way the story ends here. The only person capable of healing this man who couldn't walk, who hadn't been able to walk for 38 years. The only person capable of healing him was standing right in front of him. And yet the man's hope was in a pool. So Jesus's question reveals that there's a difference in a sense of being healed and being whole. But the man's response reveals something in its own right. That is how often it is that we put our hope in something that cannot deliver for us what we are asking it to do for us. So let me just ask you, when you're injured or when you're ill in whatever way, right? When you're hurting or when you're mourning, when you're discouraged or when you're depressed, when you're anxious, right? Is it possible that you have put your hope in something that cannot actually deliver what it is that you're asking it to? When you're hurting, when you're anxious, when you're mourning, when whatever, right? Is it possible that you're putting your hope in something that can't do what you want it to do? You're putting your hope in a bigger house or a better job or a larger income or a newer car or a dreamier vacation or a nicer neighborhood or a more popular church or a fresher start or a change in your circumstances. Well, that ought to do it, right? And all that stuff, I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of these things, right? Some of that stuff, it might kind of help for a minute. But what's going to help for the long haul, it's not a change in your circumstances, but it's a change in you. And so the question is, are you ready for it? Do you want to get well? I think the first step that you need to take toward the life that you want, toward the life that God has called you to live, is separating your identity and your injury, whatever it might be. Okay? Not letting whatever happened to you or whatever hurt you handcuff you any longer to a lesser life than the one God has called you to. And it's putting your hope in Jesus and in Jesus alone. Let me pray. God, I'm asking that you would help each of us to keep our eyes fixed on you. God, give us eyes to see you. When we're, you know, facing impossible or, you know, just uncomfortable circumstances, God, I think a lot of times you're there with us, but our hope is somewhere else. Off to the right or off to the left or over here or over there, when our true hope is often right in front of us, God. So give us the eyes to see you and to put our hope in you. And God, help every single one of us here, whatever it is that might have happened to us in our past, God, I pray that we would not let it become any part of who we are, that it would have no way of dictating the life that we live and the routines that we follow, God, that it wouldn't prevent us or trick us into thinking that we can't be who you created us to be or do the things that you've called us to do. So God, help us to not only receive the healing that we need in some of these areas, God, but help us to become whole and to become ready for the life that you have called us to on the other side of whatever it is that you have helped us to get well from. And God, I pray that as we do that, we would just fulfill so much more of what it is that you have called us to do, God, that we would be light in a dark world, that we would be, a small slice of heaven here on earth, that we would have a way of being more of your hands and your feet here in the places that you have put us each and every day. And we pray these things in the powerful name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m. Midcurrent is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin.